Welcome to Generations Friends. Kevin Swanson with you, Executive Director for Christian Home Educators, also a pastor. But the reason I'm here, I'm a father of five, and let's take a look at the headlines here before we get into the meat of the program today as we try to lay down a little bit of a vision for the next generation. Well, what's happening with this generation? We're in debt. We're in a lot of debt. The national debt now at a record $9 trillion. Last month, Congress passed and President Bush signed into law an increase in the government's borrowing ceiling to $9.8 trillion. We're already at $9 trillion. And the dollar now is devaluing even more, David. It hit another bottom in terms of its value in relation to the euro.
So the good news is that it takes less dollars to pay off our debt in the international currency, less euros. But the bad news is that, of course, there's got to have $9 trillion to make up.
Yeah, bad things happening here. But, hey, we're in a good mood because God's in control, ladies and gentlemen. And he's given us his rule for life. Fear God and keep his commandments. This is the whole duty of man. If we can just keep that thing straight, Dave, I think we'll be doing fine. Now, this news just in, televangelist Pat Dilbertson endorsed Republican presidential candidate Rudy Giuliani. Dilbertson surprised some of his evangelical counterparts in supporting the moderate candidate in the presidential race. Giuliani, a fiscal conservative, backs bestiality rights, euthanasia for diabetics over 60 years old, federal funding for NAMBLA, I think that's the sodomy for boys under 12 organization, and the imprisonment of hate preachers who insist on preaching through the book of Leviticus in Christian churches. Dilbertson, the evangelical televangelist, was quoted as saying, "Hey, Giuliani's a conservative candidate that's got a chance of winning. He's going to beat the Democrat because he's strong on national defense. Giuliani has what it takes to stop the terrorist attacks on the nation. He's committed to bombing the living daylights out of every nation on earth with nuclear capability." Oops, I'm sorry, Dave. That's the wrong story. That's our wire service from the year 2020. We have the wire service from 2020. I shouldn't have been reading that one. Actually, Dave, did you hear that Pat Robertson endorsed Giuliani? I think that was that's the current story.
Oh, yeah. So Pat Robertson kind of likes Rudy.
Yeah. Robertson likes Rudy Giuliani, which is just amazing. Here's the story. Televangelist Pat Robertson, founder of the Christian Coalition, endorsed Republican presidential candidate Rudy Giuliani on Wednesday. Here's the quote from Robertson. "It's my pleasure to announce my support for America's mayor, Rudy Giuliani, a proven leader who's not afraid of what lies ahead, blah, 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 blah. The former New York mayor backs abortion rights, gay rights, positions that put him in conflict with conservative GOP orthodoxy, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera." Well, evidently, Robertson felt like he'd overlooked the differences, Dave, on issues like killing kids and homosexuality.
Well, he might as well just endorse Hillary then. She's a proven leader. She's not afraid of what lies ahead.
Yeah. Well, it's all about beating Hillary. Have we said that before? It's all about beating Hillary. That was Bob Jones III, wasn't it? Said that. Again, trying to keep track of all my pragmatists here, Dave. I think that was the one where he was endorsing Romney. And then you had Al Mohler come out and endorse Bob Jones III on his endorsement of Romney. So, anyway, ladies and gentlemen, where are we going to? Dave, I think this is the unraveling of evangelicalism in America. These guys aren't unified on any given candidate. I'm not sure we have a compass. We don't have our bearing anymore. Hey, let's go this direction. Let's go that direction. Nobody really wants to go the same direction because nobody really has the same values, because nobody has the same morals. Dave, why do we not have the same values and morals? And why have we lost a unified sense of priority in terms of political issues? I think it has a lot to do with the fact that we've really embraced pragmatism over principles, and hardly anybody's driven by the law of God anymore. I mean, if you think about it, Dave, the law of God has been passe for about 150 years in this nation. It's hard to find anybody who really cares about the law of God as the moral standard for politics, economics, or for anything, for that matter.
Yeah, I think as the church strives to be relevant, as Christendom wants to be relevant in politics, they become increasingly irrelevant because they've lost what it was that made them Christians to begin with, striving for a holy life. So once again, seeking to become relevant, they become wholly relevant, where if they'd only sought to be holy, they could have been wholly relevant.
You know, Dave, it really doesn't matter who you're talking about, whether you're talking about mainstream Baptists or charismatics or whoever. It really doesn't matter. They're all going different directions for different reasons. They all want to beat Hillary. That's their only goal in life. And they have abandoned the principles of God's law really directing their politics. And I think for that reason, there is no hope among Christians in this country. There's just no hope. I mean, at this point, true Christianity that would really receive God's word and God's law as the standard for ethics is really almost non-existent in this nation today. And for that reason, I'm not sure we're going to see politics salvaged by the evangelicals, by the moral majority, Christian Coalition, or any of those guys. You know, I thought for a while back from the 1980s and 1990s that the Christians might have a shot at recovering somewhat of a Christian view of government, which effectively is a bottom-up form of government, and certainly a maintenance of a pro-life position and an anti-homosexual position, a pro-family position. And these sorts of issues really are just being compromised right down the slide to Gomorrah. And we're seeing this election after election after election after election. You have guys like Romney saying he's endorsing Enda, and yet Bob Jones III absolutely loves Romney and thinks he's the man. So, you know, what are we going to have? We're going to have way more pro-homosexual of an agenda under Romney than we would under George W. Bush, because we continue to go down the slide to Gomorrah. Could it be, Dave, that one day we will have a conservative that will back euthanasia for diabetics over 60 years old, bestiality rights, and federal funding for NAMLA, the pro-sodomy for little boys organization that, by the way, Giuliani would march behind the NAMBLA float in the New York parades back in the 1990s. I remember reading stories about Giuliani being right there next to the NAMBLA float in those New York gay pride celebrations. So, you know, he's participating in all the gay pride things in the 1990s. I have a feeling the Republicans will take us straight to Gomorrah, and we will have some real hardcore pro-sodomy legislation here in the next couple of administrations.
Well, I'm more optimistic than you are. I think not over the next 4 years, mind you. I think the next 4 years we'll be paying a price in some big ways. But I think in the long term, there is discontent among Christians with the choices that are available to them. They're looking, where are the Roy Moores out there? Where are the Christians? And I think what we're doing is we're suffering for the backlash of the man who is currently president. We thought we were electing an evangelical Christian, but he didn't rule like one. I mean, yes, he's vetoed stem cell research. He's stood in the way of a few things, but really God's word didn't guide him. And because we have this man that we raised up as an evangelical, as a Christian ruler, and he didn't rule that way, people are finding, well, that doesn't really matter if you're a Christian or not, because these things are going to move forward anyway. So we're getting, a horrible crop of candidates. I think probably the worst batch of candidates in my lifetime.
So what you're saying is we have a very bad pool. So if the pool is shallow and the pool is stinky, then we're not going to get any good candidate out of it. And that may be the fact of the matter. And Dave, maybe what we need to do is establish a better pool. And the only way to establish a better pool, the only way we're going to get godly leaders is they're raised in churches and families who actually fear God and keep his commandments. And those are few and far between. So, I think we're suffering the consequences, Dave, of a system that produces these people.
Well, I think it's not just the system. I think it's the state of the church. Now, the reason I have hope is because there is, I believe, some changes happening across America. I think there are some churches that are going back to the Bible, and it's informing them about life, about ethics, about government. And there's homeschoolers who are raising children up. So, you know, give it 20 years. Let some of these kids who are coming out of the Witherspoon Law School, some of these kids who are going to Patrick Henry, you know, I think we're going to have a better batch of candidates in the future. We just have to keep the Republic together. Until then,
short-term pessimist and long-term optimist. It sounds to me like Dave is saying here. And, you know, Dave, I am optimistic in the long term. God's going to turn this thing around with those faithful that will stand in the gap. And we're going to see that happen, I think, in the next 20 to 30 years, but not in the near future. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, in a moment, we're going to talk about Ron Paul. Ron Paul is raking in the cash. He's getting, what, $3-4 million a day. In fact, I think the unprecedented single-day fundraising record goes to Ron Paul just a day or two ago. He hauled in some $4 million in a single day, and there's a lot of folks who have some hope for Ron Paul. We're going to take a hard look at Ron Paul's record and positions in just a moment on this program.
With literacy rates falling and American schools approaching third world nation status in math and science, parents everywhere are concerned. And they're getting involved. That's why tens of thousands of families across the state of Colorado have turned to home education. For over 20 years, Christian Home Educators of Colorado has hosted an annual conference designed to encourage and inspire families anywhere along the path, from beginners to veteran homeschoolers. Throughout the year, they offer special introductory seminars, retreats, graduations, a news magazine, and a satellite school to aid in the required record keeping. CHECK also offers a bookstore complete with the best resources, tapes, and curriculum, all of which has been carefully chosen to equip and supplement your homeschool program. To learn more about CHECK, visit their website at chec.org.
Mm-hmm. back on Generations Friends. Kevin Swanson here looking at the 2008 presidential races in this country. And, Dave, there are some top candidates that are doing fairly well, and Ron Paul would be among them. I saw the 8-minute bit from YouTube where he was on the Today Show with Jay Leno, and I thought he did a pretty good job. Now, when he was at the values debate, I was rather negative on Ron Paul because I didn't think he presented himself very well. I wasn't really sure if he feared God. Still not sure whether the guy fears God or not. I know he hates covetousness. Now, you know what I'm referring to here is Exodus 18, where the qualifications for an elected political representative are laid out, and that is they've got to be able, they've got to hate covetousness, they've got to fear God, and they should be honest. Okay, now, there's not a question in my mind that this man is honest. He is honest as the day is long about his positions, and even when he knows that the response of people in the audience will not be positive, he continues to come out with his own position and say, this is what I believe, and people were, in many cases, rather upset with him at the values debate because of some of the things he said. He is honest. No question in my mind, he's honest. And he's pretty principled, and he's pretty consistent in his voting record. You could pretty much always count on what Ron Paul's going to do if he's going to vote on something in Congress.
He's going to vote no.
He's going to vote no, yeah, on a lot of things. But I'm not sure if he fears God, and I'm not sure if he's able. And I, you know, when it comes to some of the other candidates, Alan Keyes appears to fear God, not sure if he's able, but not exactly sure where all his principles lie, and not exactly sure whether he opposes the growth of government, the covetousness for power and money that seems to exist in Washington. I'm not sure Alan Keyes is really against those sorts of things. I can't tell. Again, Dave, maybe part of the problem here is that it's difficult to know what these people's positions are and to know whether or not they are principled candidates because in some cases they haven't even served in government. You have no idea what the record is.
And that's part of the problem of the system that you referred to before. Because it's a popular system, what you have to do to become a candidate of any standing is appeal to the populace. The populace, by and large, doesn't respond to principle. They respond to the applications of that principle. I think where the appeal of Ron Paul is he is obviously not a guy sticking his finger up and finding out which way the wind blows.
Yeah.
Now, he's not doing much to change the direction of the wind either. He's not a particularly good communicator. He's not going to challenge Ronald Reagan for his ability to persuade people. I think therein lies some of the Ron Paul enigma.
Yeah, he's rather boring, and sometimes he has a hard time getting a full sentence out and doing it in a way that everybody can understand what he's saying. And so for that reason, I'm a little hesitant on Ron Paul. But let's go over some of Ron Paul's records. One of the things that really turns people off on Ron Paul, especially those of the conservative pro-life bent, is that he does not want to use the power of the federal government to accomplish his agenda. Please understand, folks, we have two issues that seem to ride side by side when it comes to a biblical way of looking at things. Number one issue, are you going to be a socialistic, big government kind of person that uses the power of government, and specifically the power of a centralized government, to accomplish your agenda? There are some people, Dave, in the pro-life community that have told me that any nation, not even a state, but any nation that engages in abortion, we ought to invade them, we ought to take over and enforce pro-life laws over those countries. And again, Dave, I don't think that's the responsibility of government to solve problems in that way. We're not pushing for a centralized form of government that could solve all problems. That certainly was not the idea of the founders of this nation. They established the federal government not so that the federal government would come into every single state and every time there was a murder in any kind of a home or business or wherever, the federal government stepped into those situations, prosecuted the case, and then hung the criminals themselves. I don't think we ought to expect the federal government to do that sort of thing. The Ninth and the Tenth Amendments certainly place a lot of the powers within government at the feet of the states and the local communities, local governments. And yet you have centrists within Christian groups that think that government ought to centralize all power and solve all problems. Dude, that's nothing but statism and socialism. They've just bought into a socialistic way of looking at things.
Yeah, there's two different issues there. One is federalism versus statism. Are we a group of states that have a federal agreement, a contract, a covenant to live as one? So are we little individual states, or are we one nation with some minor forms of top-down kind of governing. And that was partly what the Civil War was about, and I'm afraid the Constitution has been redefined since the Civil War. But more than that is the jurisdiction of government. What is government's job to do? Even in the big sense, government's job is not to stop all sin. There are some sins, like, say, covetousness, that nobody can stop. Those are quiet sins. There are certain sins that the government is actually called to do, like punishing the murderer, like protecting property. Now, when you have two governments, say Canada and the United States, and if Canada is doing their job poorly, it isn't the job of the United States to correct them any more than it's my job to go invade my neighbor's house and tell him he's not spanking his kids right.
Yeah, exactly. And to assume that it's the role of the federal government to solve all problems is certainly a violation of the Constitution of the United States. And here's the other assumption, that somehow the President of the United States and the federal government has all power. The whole idea of the Constitution was not to lay all power at the feet of Congress, the federal government, or the President of the United States. The whole idea of the Constitution was to deal out the power a little bit. So, again, a President has only limited powers by the Constitution of the United States. There are only certain things he can do, and if he violates the Constitution of the United States, I think he's really effectively violating jurisdictions.
Now, Kevin, if that was the case, don't you think they would have put that in writing, maybe given us amendments saying something like, you know, the powers not delegated to the federal government are reserved for the states and the people? Don't you think that founders would have thought of that?
They did. It was the 10th Amendment.
Oh, we haven't used that in ages.
Oh, yeah, okay. Well, maybe we need to get it back out and read it and go over that one more time. Well, ladies and gentlemen, first worldview issue we have to look at, and that is, does the President of the United States have all power? No, he doesn't. Yet, Ron Paul has some positions that I don't always agree with, and I want to go through some of the positions that he took at the values debate a month or two ago when I took my son down to Fort Lauderdale, Florida, and we witnessed this debate. They asked the question, a federal judge prohibited the Indiana legislature from praying in Jesus' name, would you as president use impeachment to prohibit this form of judicial activism? Now, I know Ron Paul is in favor of judicial impeachment. I mean, he's hot on that issue. He thinks that's one way to rein in the federal judiciary. And yet, he voted no on this one. Why? Because I think he doesn't want the government to engage in this form of prayers. I mean, it's the only way I can understand his answer. He didn't explain the answer. He just said no, he would not use impeachment procedures for that form of judicial activism. In another question that was very similar to this one, I think this one was asked by the guy from Voice of the Martyrs, Tom White. He asked the question, would you deny visas to Muslims coming into this country to build mosques? And he brought that out, that the Muslims are doing a lot of work in this country, and they're building mosques, and they're gaining a following, just as they're doing, obviously, in England and everywhere else where you find Muslims and Muslim activism happening. Well, he says, no, he wouldn't do that. He would not deny visas to Muslims coming into this country to build mosques. And, Dave, I think the reason for this is because he's somewhat libertarian. He takes libertarian principles all the way to the maximum, and libertarians believe in absolutism in their freedom, in their concept of freedom. It is not bounded by the law of God. Now, I happen to believe freedom's a great concept, and liberty is effectively established and maximized by the law of God. So the one and the many can be balanced by the law of the one and the many, the triune God. So what he's doing, Dave, is he's driving the religious freedom principle as hard as he possibly can. He's maximizing on that principle to the umpteenth degree, but as I've said on this program before, I don't think you can take religious freedom to the umpteenth degree. I think God's law has to measure that thing a little bit. If someone's doing human sacrifice or coming into our country to do human sacrifices in our major cities and establish religions where human sacrifice is happening, I'm saying no. Why? Because the Word of God says human sacrifice is evil, wrong, bad, except for one. God allows for one. In fact, he decreed one human sacrifice for the sins of human beings. So if there's a religion out there that's continuing to engage in human sacrifice, outside of the one sacrifice that was the Son of God, Jesus Christ, who died on the cross for our sins, and if there's a religion out there that's going for human sacrifice, I'm shutting them down, and I'm not allowing these folks to immigrate into this country. So Dave, you can see there's a difference between me and Ron Paul on that particular issue. He thinks he can be neutral, and that's the problem. Neutrality is impossible, my friends, in education, economics, politics, you name it. It's impossible to be neutral. You're going to have some kind of a God and some kind of a law system that's going to be behind the civil structures that you put in place. And Ron Paul just does not acknowledge that. And Dave, I think it is because he's bought into that secularist concept that somehow you can be neutral in your political state, which cannot be. However, there's some good news, too. And let me run through some of the good news. Ron Paul would defund Planned Parenthood. And Dave, that is one of the number one agenda items that really can happen on the federal level and should have happened under George W. Bush, under George H.W. Bush, under Ronald Reagan, under all of these quote-unquote godly men who were supposed to be doing something godly while they were in power at the highest post of the land, and yet they would not. They refused to defund Planned Parenthood. And, Dave, this is one of, I think, the worst problems that we have with our federal government. The very least they could do is stop the money flowing to the abortion providers across this country.
And there will be a political price, and somebody's going to have to stand up bold, because you're going to have to veto the entire budget that comes from Congress. You're going to have to stand fast and say, I will not pass a budget. I will shut down the government indefinitely as long as there is this line item to fund Planned Parenthood. That's what you need in a leader, a man with that kind of conviction, that kind of principle, who's willing to pay the price. Unfortunately, I don't think the Republican Congress would stand with the president.
Yeah, he might be able to sustain a third. It's hard to, he's got to have a third of one house in order to sustain that veto. Anyway, here's a few other things from Ron Paul's agenda from the values debate. He would stop federal courts from trying to halt the public display of the Ten Commandments, and check, that's good, I like that. He would protect military chaplains, the right to pray according to the dictates of his conscience. I think that's appropriate. So there's actually, he's maybe a little inconsistent there on or maybe consistent on his view of religious expression in the military. He would not support federal legislation to prevent people like Terry Schiavo from being dehydrated to death. And that is federal legislation. He would support, I'm sure, state legislation. But again, this is an area where many pro-lifers would separate with him, because he's not going to use federal legislation to prevent people like Terry Schiavo from being dehydrated to death.
And I think he's consistent, because he wouldn't have a federal murder law, for instance.
Yeah.
He doesn't think the FBI should be investigating murder unless it's across a state border.
Yeah, he would also not prosecute illegal pornography. And Dave, another example, and probably leaving that up to the states. He would not expand broadcast indecency regulations to cable networks. He would remove federal funding from any school that carried pro-homosexual propaganda. So there's one that's probably quite in line with a lot of pro-family people like us.
But to be consistent, he should remove funding for all schools.
And I'm sure he would. I'm sure he would prefer that. Part of his agenda is to eliminate a huge portion of the federal budget. He, you know, slashing roughly half the cabinet posts and taking out all these departments, including the Department of Education. You know, and that agenda is running strong right now. People are appreciating that, and I am one of them. I think we need to cut the federal government quite significantly. Unless there's a candidate that's willing to do that, I don't think we're going to be successful in electing a president. He would not endorse a commission to oversee the eradication of slavery in Sudan. And I'm sure he's thinking, would just another commission do any good here? So that's typically the way Ron Paul thinks about these things. Ron Paul is not very optimistic on the federal government's ability to halt all evils in the world. He happens to think that we need to limit government significantly. We need to bring all of our troops home, defend our own borders, take care of our own nation, and not to be spending all the taxpayers' money on these various sundry projects. Well, the real issue that you and I think need to focus on, Dave, in this next election is really the persecution of Christians, because I think this is coming. It's coming in two forms. One, the UN Convention on the Rights of the Child, and the assault on family rights, parental rights. I think that is coming. And secondly, also, the homosexual hate crime bill, where they're going to come after Christians who stand up against homosexuality and abortion, and parents who want to homeschool their own children in their homes. These sorts of things are coming down the pike, and unless we have a presidential candidate and a president who has the guts to throw his body down before this pro-homosexual legislation and this anti-family legislation, unless we have a president with the principles and the backbone and the courage willing to stand up against the coming persecution on Christians, I think we're going to be in a lot of trouble. And Dave, I think this presidential candidate had better be better than George W. Bush, because George W. Bush has given in again and again and again and again to the homosexual lobby, the abortion lobby in some cases, and certainly to the lobby for big government. He spent more money. We're just talking domestic spending here, not military spending. He spent more money as a percentage of the GNI, and has increased funding as a percentage of the GNI far more than any president since Lyndon B. Johnson. So, again, if we want freedom in this country, if we want a man who can stand on principles, it's got to be somebody with more backbone than George W. Bush had. Ladies and gentlemen, that's the scoop. At this point, I'm not endorsing anybody for the 2008 presidential elections because I think we've got problems everywhere. But I'm stepping back, I'm looking, and I'm asking the question, is there a presidential candidate who has the backbone to stand up against the pro-homosexual hate crimes legislation and the anti-family legislation that is sure to come down the pike in the next 4 to 8 years? Ladies and gentlemen, you can interact with my program by emailing me at host@kevinswanson.com. And you can hear the program anytime, anywhere in the world at kevinswanson.com. This is Kevin Swanson inviting you back again next time as we lay down a vision for the next generation.